Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Can We Talk Radio. I am your weekly host, Raz Williams, bringing you Can We Talk Fridays from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Today, we're going to do something a little different. I'm fortunate today to be interviewing a special guest on today's show who goes by the name of Mar L., who is the author of the book titled Everything a Woman Wants to Hear, First Thing in the Morning. Not only will we be interviewing Mar L. on tonight's show about his book, but we will also engage Mr. Mar L. about godly relationships between men and women and get his perspective. With that said, guys, if you have a question or comment, you want to call in and ask the author a question, you can call us at 347-945-7310. That number again is 347-945-7310. And I want to welcome Mr. Mar L. to Can We Talk Radio. Mar, what's going on, son? How you doing?
Raz, what's going on? Thanks for having me, man. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely. Perfectly.
Good.
Well, Mar, man, thank you very much for agreeing to do this interview. And, if you will, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, trying to think, there's so much of life, but for the most part, I mean, I'm currently in a relationship coach. I'm an author. I'm also a musician and singer. But right now, my main focus is obviously, relationship coaching. I wrote my new book, as you mentioned, Everything a Woman Wants to Hear, First Thing in the Morning. My previous life, I was actually an educator for a number of years. I was educated for about 17 years and switching gears. I've always had the arts within me. But the second half of life, one of my favorite quotes to live by is, it's never too late to become what you might have been. So I'm in active pursuit of being what I could have been. And it's coming together very nicely. So that's a little brief spiel. I know your callers have a lot of questions, and I'd probably rather do more answer them than kind of just speak, because I could talk for the whole hour and a half, but, I know you want to get your callers.
Absolutely. What we'll do, Mar, we're just going to ask you some questions and give the people listening a chance to know more about you. And we'll definitely, if people call in, we'll take some calls, and we'll go from there.
Sounds like a plan.
All right,
man.
So Mar, man. So let me ask you this: what inspired you to write your first this book, and how did you become involved with the subject theme of your book?
Well, my primary purpose, it's definitely like most books, is the story behind the story. My primary reason was to resurrect chivalry. Chivalry I found is dead. So my top goal, my top priority was, or motivation, writing this book is to bring back chivalry. A lot of times, I hear from a lot of women that guys can't not only can they not hold a conversation, but they don't even know how to be nice. So it's kind of like a template or a manual. It's not necessarily a Bible, but I consider it a red book of charm. And with today's information age and social media, there are many ways that you can whisper sweet something that may not be in their face. You can send it online, send it as an instant message, Instagram, a text message. So this book has a tons of carrots or treat that you can really, you know, send out. And it's unisex. It's funny. I originally wrote it for men, but I tell women all the time, if you use this book on your man, oh my God, you think it would do something to you as a woman. You know, it does something totally different to a man that most men don't get to experience, because men are always responsible of having to say the right things and do the right things. But I say women all the time, you know, you whisper a sweet nothing or two into your man's ear and see what happens. You might get more out of them than you ever thought you'd imagine. So that's the primary reason, like I said, trying to resurrect chivalry. Also, too, you know, the testimony, it is a gift, are given without repentance. We all know that biblically. I say all the time that despite people's lifestyle, the people's ways, gifts, again, like the Bible says, are given without repentance. And I say that because, you know, I realized I had a gift of writing, gift of gab, if you will, and I was using it for selfish gain. But I had to have that come to Jesus meeting with myself and say, Max, when are you going to use this for greater good? Because, you know, having that advantage of knowing what to say, how to have engaging conversations with women, I was, you know, kind of capitalizing off of it, and it wasn't a good look. So, but once I really started to reflect and had I'm going to preach by saying this. I had to have a conversation with myself, to myself, and about myself. And we all came to the conclusion you need to do better and use this gift for the greater good instead of your own selfish gain. And, you know, so it brought it all full circle. It's been going well. A lot of positive feedback because, you know, I say the book is rated PG-10. A 7-year-old could read it, but, you know, anybody, it's perfect for general audiences, even under the age of 13. So, I mean, it's a universal book. It has a lot of biblical overtones. That's there you have it, man.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Marm, let me ask you this question here. What makes your book stand out from the crowd? Because I know there's other authors, well-known authors. You got the Steve Harveys who wrote, you know, The 90 Day Rule. You know, I don't really totally agree with that, but anyway, it's a whole different show right there. But you got right. Kevin Lyles as well and so on. And so what makes your book stand out from the crowd?
Really, you know, it really is the sole purpose is to put a smile on your face. A trinket for every day. You know, I would like to call it a romantic devotional. It's kind of a hybrid of romance, entertainment, but also kind of like a devotional because it's something for you every single day. It's not a book on, you know, do this. It's a suggestion. It's more suggestive. It's not necessarily saying, you know, this is law, this is how it is. And that's what really probably sets it apart in that anybody who reads it, you know, within 2 or 3 pages, you're either going to be chuckling, laughing. It evokes all emotions. You know, there are a lot of, like, you know, endearing emotions. There are a lot of emotions like, oh, you're just crazy. You know, you're so silly. But the purpose of that is kind of like a conversation piece. I always say also, too, it's a good conversational piece. You know, if you're at a Christian event and sit there in the middle of the table and open the book up and say, what is this, and just get to reading. And it really is romantic entertainment. But, again, it does have Christian overtones because of the fact that, I mean, I kind of synchronized it to be a year long. So it has things like Christmas and Easter and things you can reflect on upon that. So that's what really separates the book from the others. It's not to create contention. It's not the point. It's not to point any fingers. It's not saying, you know, women need help, men need help. Now, I will say it helps both sides of the fence, you know, as far as just alternative ways or 365 ways of showing your affinity for your loved one or significant other, or just being nice, you know, something that you can, it's a nice gift to give to your boss for Christmas, birthdays. So that's what separates, like I said, it's really, really romantic entertainment. It's not erotic. It's romantic, if anything. And so that's what kind of sets it apart. It's not designed to say, this is what's wrong with women, this is what's wrong with men. No, I studied it all. It's more designed and here's a solution. Let's be nice. Let's all be nice, which is the theme of love, the theme of Christianity anyway, to he that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. So showing love is the ultimate thing.
Absolutely. Okay, sir. So I want to ask you this more. Like, where did your love of books, book writing, where did that come from?
You said where did the love of book writing come from?
Yeah, your love for book writing and storytelling and the inspiration.
Yeah.
I mean, where did this all come from?
Again, it started probably. I say when I came out with the book, my dad was like, "Where'd you get all this stuff from?" I said, "Well, who you got it from?" Because my dad used to romance my mom in his own special way. He would write her poetry, and I remember there were many nights, romantic nights, where they used to have a little red light in the living room. They say, they tell us to go in all the rooms. This is our living room for us the rest of the night. And, he'd play those Marvin Gaye albums, and, he'd slow dance with her or the Al Green, all that stuff. And I learned that early on, seeing that kind of romance, especially in the context of a marriage. It wasn't like, that was my dad's wife. You know what I'm saying? That was my mom. So that's where it kind of stemmed. As far as the love of writing, I'm an educator. I believe that writing and reading go hand in hand. The better reader you are is based on how well you write. Conversely, how well you write is based on how well you read. So it kind of helped me become. It's funny. My undergrad is in mathematics, but most people think I got an undergrad major in journalism or English because I am a wordsmith. But no, it actually came just a hobby of I loved writing, and I learned that again. It made me better, reader as far as comprehension. I mean, as a young guy, I always had to have my trouble. So I developed all those skills by reading and writing, and have them run unilaterally together.
Absolutely. Very good. So, Mar, how long have you been writing for?
I'm going to say probably about 7 years. As a kid, you always write here and there, but really started getting serious about it back in, probably 07, 06. So I was like, wait, man, so much of my math, right? Here we are, 2015. Oops, I'm older than I thought I was. So I guess about 9 years, if you think about it, man, because I started getting into it more and more and then started making it part of my daily routine. So, yeah, man.
All right. So, Mar, let me ask you this, sir. Let's hear. Can we hear a few excerpts from your book? I mean, can you, the people listening, can you give a little snippet of some of the things that you have contained in your book?
Man, I am so glad you asked that question. I would love to. So I'm just going to go ahead and kind of go random. Let's see here. Oh, so classic. How lucky I am to have someone as pretty as you in my life. I have better odds of finding a grain of sugar and a tablespoon of salt. That's one little trinket. Let me go to another one right here. Although the sun is beaming right now, it still looks like midnight when I compare it to how much your smile brightens up my life. Another one that I kind of like, let's say your significant other's name is Lisa. You would tell her, we all have favorite quotes that we live by. However, my favorite quote is Lisa, but that's the only one I want to live by. And then a classic one which I like, and I'll give you the floor. I can keep reading on, but this one I like. This is my personal favorite. Very simple and to the point. I'm catching feelings, and I hope I never drop them.
All right, ladies, you heard that. Call in. We want to hear you. If you guys are calling for the first time, we're talking to Mar, author Mar L, special guest, with his book titled Mar, what's the title of your book?
Everything a Woman Wants to Hear First Thing in the Morning.
You heard it from Mar L. The number to call us is 347-945-7310. That number again is 347-945-7310. Again, we're talking to special guest Mr. Mar L, author of Everything a Woman Wants to Hear First Thing in the Morning. So, Mar, I wanted to ask you, what are your goals and intentions in this book? I mean, how do you feel like you've achieved them? Like, do you feel like you've actually, the original intentions of when you first wrote this book, do you feel that they've been achieved? I mean, what's been your feedback from people that have read your book?
Well, it's funny. Everybody who picks up the book, initially they look at it and they kind of just, first glance, they think it's a book of they may have a totally different impression, but once they read the book, it's like, wow. The more I thumb through the book, it gets better and better with each page. Something I would extend to all aspiring writers or entertainers. It's funny because, again, I was a vice principal before I did this. So just kind of tell you my previous career, like I said earlier, I was in education. So the hardest part about being an author is not really the writing itself. It's more so the marketing and advertising. I was kind of a novice at that. So I say that as far as goals, you know, it's really getting the book out there. Like, I appreciate you having me on your show because, you know, it's not a chance for people to really see this. Of course, you know, I work with, you know, literary agents and publishers and all that stuff, but that learning curve was actually more challenging and difficult than anything else. So it actually, it's come along steadily and nicely, and that's the other thing, too. When you, this book's been out about a year. Rome wasn't built overnight, and I got to realize that. You know, a lot of times you want it all microwave, you want it to happen now. So it's been a steady climb. It really has been a steady climb as far as its, its success and its notoriety. Also, I'm working on an audiobook, which is part two of this, and a phone application. So this book will soon be a phone app. It already is an ebook, you know, so it's out as an ebook as well as a regular hardback. But I'm also working on a phone app where it kind of would be an ulterior version of the book. But it'll kind of like basically send you something every day. But as far as its success, you know, I'm very proud of it. Like I said, it is a steady climb as far as its popularity. But it really comes, really, I found out, like everything, one reader at a time makes it. That's how the word gets out, you know, by word of mouth and one reader at a time. But again, just to Karen or just to reiterate those aspiring authors, the main thing is get that product done. Because your biggest learning curve will be, like I said, the marketing and the advertising of it all, not so much the product itself. But the first step is to don't let that deter you. Get the product done so that you can, you know, work on and build upon that.
Absolutely. Well, I want to take a call real quick. We have a caller. Caller, how you doing? And
okay.
Do you have a question or comment for the author?
Hello?
Just call. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. My name is Renee. I was calling to see what your feedback is from males versus females. And do most males tend to, just like with some of the first books written by, like, Steve Harvey or whatnot, a lot of men were somewhat, I wouldn't say offended, but felt like, you know, their game had been exposed. Has that been any of the feedback that you've received from males or females?
Caller, thanks for calling
Mark.
In. To answer the question, yeah, thanks for calling in, caller. It was so funny. I say all the time, my largest clientele, like a lot of these books, have been women. But every guy I've met who's bought the book, they tell me, Marvin or Mario, this is a game changer. Like, wow, I wish I had gotten it sooner. Now, it's funny, you know, you show this to some of these old men, they read it, and they're like, partner, I could have helped you write that book. And in my mind, I'm like, no, you couldn't have. But, you know, you let them have it. Because a lot of guys, that's unfortunate. They're too cool for school. Men don't read, for starters. You know, but it's so funny you say that, caller. I actually... Ironically, the men who have bought the book, every single one said, man, this is what I needed. Like, this was just in time and what the doctor ordered. But again, a lot of times because of the male ego, we act like we don't need the help. But the upside I'm looking forward to is that as the book continues to get notoriety, like those other books, eventually men started buying them once they saw enough women were engaged in making all the purchases. It was like, you know, if I'm going to a lady's house and every lady's house I go over, whether it's my significant other or mom or auntie, and I see Steve Harvey's book on the mantle, well, at some point, man, like, you know, let me take a quick peek at this. But as far as, you know, ruining a man's game or airing out his dirty laundry, again, ironically, that is not the nature of this book. I tell every man, it is only meant to help. And the men who have purchased it, they all say, man, wow, Marvin, you are exactly right. This has helped me immensely.
Okay, so last question. So what about the woman who feels like talk is cheap and this doesn't, you know, really intrigue her? How have you dealt with any of that? Have you dealt with any negative feedback from women who felt like, you know, this is just, you know, I don't know?
You know, it's so funny. I have tons of stories. I remember once I was at a book fair. No, I was actually at a jazz festival. And a lady grabbed my book. You know, she read it, and she actually threw it on the ground. And I said, whoa. But again, I say that to say that's all part of the territory. You're going to have some negativity. Really, my response, and again, I don't want to project and say it, but this is my synopsis of that. I look at those women who had that is their issue. They obviously have been, you know, have emotional issues they need to push through, or dysfunctional, because, I mean, even if it's not your suture, a lot of times women are, you know, some women may be scorned or broken, so they may not feel anything that has to do with love or positivity. They want no part of it whatsoever. But again, just the real. So I have had those cases, but you know, you keep pushing. But overwhelming, the overwhelming majority, they all say the same thing. I'm telling you, it's a nice coffee table reader, nice addition to have. It is literally a red book of charms that is actually unisex. So it's so funny. So yeah, I've had some horror stories, like, man, but again, you know, your product is not, you're not going to have 100% satisfied customers all the time. But
and
I would say about
that. Where can you find the book at?
I'm glad you mentioned that. One, you can go to my website, which is everythingawomanwants.com, or you can get it online at Barnes & Noble or Amazon or Yahoo, or all the major book retailers online. So it is on online retails, or again, my website, everythingawomanwants.com. You know, of course, I know they're going to plug it later on. I know Brad's going to plug it later on, but you can reach me at Marl Author on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, or my real name, which is Marvin Lawton. Yeah, so that's where you can get it, everythingawomanwants.com, or any online distributor, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Yahoo, they all carry it. And it's an e-book as well, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, Renee, let me ask you a couple questions before you leave. Now, so based upon what you heard, as a woman, how do you feel about the material? Like, I mean, like, I'm not sure if you heard some of the excerpts from his material, but it sounds like these are very, like, nice catchphrases. Some would call them pickup lines, so to speak. I hate to put it in that category, but it comes – It's like a, you know, a nice sort of compliment. Now, would that be something that you would want to hear first thing in the morning?
I think it's always good to hear something sweet first thing in the morning. I mean, whether it's in the morning, the midday, you know, at night, whatever. It's always good to hear something that puts a smile on your face. And if that's what the attempt is, then I mean, you know, I would knock his. I'm not gonna knock his hustle. I mean. My hat's off to you.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
All right. Renee from Los Angeles.
We appreciate you, Renee. Thanks so much. We appreciate you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Mark. So there you have it. Guys, if you tune in for the first time, we're interviewing a special guest author, Marl, talking about his book, Everything a Woman Wants to Hear, First Thing in the Morning. That's Everything a Woman Wants to Hear, First Thing in the Morning. So, Mar, I wanted to ask you, now, as far as your book, how does your book relate to the area of relationships, especially when it comes to, you know, to God and living a godly lifestyle as a man? Like, how do you think that ties in?
Well, it's so funny you say that. This is a funny answer, but it's a true answer. And that is, yeah, it's a funny answer. You know, again, the theme is love. Of the many reasons why relationships become disenchanting is because of complacency. This is a perfect, I tell you, know, this book has been endorsed by a few marriage retreats and local churches as a means of literally spicing up that bedroom and or just their romantic component of their relationship. So it actually is a good pick-me-up where they can kind of read together, you know, over nice, you know, I don't know, if which some saints may not believe in a bottle of wine together, but I believe in holy matrimony, all is fair, because that's the beauty of, that's the advantage of, or the privilege, one of the amenities of being married. You know, you get to share all things together. So sitting down reading this book with a nice little nightcap. The other thing, too, is that I kind of call it like a modern-day Song of Solomon, because, and the reason why I say that, here comes a funny story, and you can't, it's good if you're talking or courting a woman, or even if you're married to a woman, you know, thou dost have breast of the loins, O thee, Juliet. You know, you can't really say that in a modern-day King James Version. You know, they have some nice catchphrases in there, but, you know, you want to modernize romantic words or phrases, so. You know, did I pull anything out of Song of Solomon? No, I didn't. However, I mean, I am very familiar with that, you know, that book, if you will. So, you know, but again, with the old King's English, you know, it's kind of hard to be romantic when there's something thou dost have henceforth to other. I love thee. You know, so we try to modernize it. So, yeah, it actually, like I said again, it's actually been endorsed by a lot of churches because of the fact that it does have some biblical overtones. So it works out. So I believe it's really a good fit, especially in Christian relationships, because, again, they're always trying to, we're always plagued with how can we keep things exciting and how can we stay saved with it, you know, and how we court or how we date or how we intermingle. In summary, I think it sits real well, especially in a religious context.
Absolutely. So, Mark, for those interested in exploring the subject or theme of your book, where should they start?
Right. Ask, make sure I heard you right. Ask that one more time for me, man.
Yeah, for those people that are really interested in exploring the topic of your book or really want to get into the meat of your book, where should they start?
No, you mean like where they should get it, or you mean like far as actual just the overall content or that whole subject?
Absolutely.
Of romance?
The content, the subject, exactly.
Be nice. You know what I mean? Like that's the whole point of it. As I said, that's why it's a unisex book, although originally I wrote it for men. It's unisex where women could share this with their significant others it's really brighten up someone's day. That really is the sole purpose. You know, whether it's to evoke the emotion of, oh, or you're so silly, you're so crazy. You know, again, it kind of just creates that gateway of just being nice. A lot of times we're not nice anymore. You know, we're saved and we're holy. We're not just nice, you know. I'm not going to go overboard and say this is not something I would say brother to brother, but even in my interactions with, you know, my male friends, just the way of being nice to your brother, you know, and just whether your brother or your sister, you know, like the song says, since I lay my burden down with the Lord, I don't need to be walking up to you and lay my burden down to you. That's not your job as my friend or my loved one or significant other. You know, that's Jesus' job, lay my burden down with them. But I'm with my loved ones or, you know, my significant others. How can we support each other? How can I be nice? How can I be kind? Kind is also an action word, you know, being kind, but you can do that also in verbiage too, not just in opening up the door or, you know, whatever chivalrous gesture. You know, you can also do that as far as a kind word in and of itself.
Absolutely. Now, Mark, you and I have been on, in fact, how I got to know you is that I was invited to be on a panel addressing single women at a Bible study and how men think, and you and I were on that same panel. Now, we've had some extensive conversations about godly male and female courtships and relationships and marriages, and what would you say, because you are a relationship coach, and I kind of want to get into that real quick with you. What would you say are some of the reasons why the body of Christ is having a tough time sustaining healthy marriages and relationships today? I mean, the last time we talked, you mentioned something very important, which was in the area of realistic godly expectations in the opposite sex. Can you kind of comment on that real quick?
Well, it's so interesting to say that. You know, in Christianity, we always talk about the theme. I always say all the time, we talk about the theme of love. But we really don't practice that. The reason why relationships, like we said, they have a hard time because they're unrealistic expectations. And no one really discusses those expectations and or standards. And what I mean by that is, and I'm a case of point, I think it's kind of important we talk about this. Women say, you know, they want men to be godly men, and they should know how to be romantic and charming, especially if they're over 35. Well, I use the example on that panel I'm going to share with the callers. You're right. Here's a good example. A man opened up the door for a woman. Now, you figure at 35, he should know to open up the door for a lady. But let's just assume, for the sake of argument, maybe he never learned that. Maybe he grew up around all men, or maybe his circumstance, whatever the circumstances were, maybe he just not learned that obvious truth. My thing is, a man or a woman, hold somebody accountable for what they know, and if they don't know, what is wrong with teaching them? So what, he's 35, and you have to tell him, you know, you're not going to open my door? Well, with that kind of attitude right there, no, I'm not going to open your door. Whereas, if you would politely say, you know, I'm not going to insult your intelligence or anything like that, but, you know, I, as a lady, I've been accustomed to women, men always open my door. Do you mind opening up your door for me? Now, not only were you non-combative, but you gave him opportunity to change behavior. Even though it's obvious, he should know how to open the door. What's wrong with giving someone a chance to correct that behavior? If you want to see that behavior change, you can't assume that they know. You know, as a man, I may, like, because conversely, I could be just, this is justified as when I'm at a family function, I've learned that my significant other should fix my plate. Now, I don't have that kind of hang up, but I would be just as justified in having an attitude with you as my woman if I'm at your family function and I'm sitting down and you haven't fixed my plate. Now, again, please understand, I don't expect that of a woman, but I'm kind of keeping it contextually of, whereas if I explain to my significant other, you know, how I grew up, women always, you know, took care of their man. That's one way they showed they took care of their man. Now, that woman may have never learned that in her life, and maybe she never grew up with a father, maybe she didn't have a family situation where they did those kind of things. But regardless of the case, let me give her the chance. Why not? What's wrong with me giving her the chance to do the things I like? And it doesn't make it, this is really rich for the caller.
Really rich for the caller.
It doesn't make it less, any less novel for me having to tell you what I want. I'm going to assume that you don't know. Now, if you don't do what I ask you as far as, you know, what I would like to see happen, then I have some other issues because it's like, okay, here I'm telling you what I want, what I need, what I like. And, no, you're not showing, you're not doing anything to show that you care by doing what I asked you. You know, and again, I'm not saying, I'm not giving these as directives. I'm just giving you, rather, I'm giving a simple example of let's be reasonable with each other. The problem why there's such a divide is because we always assume that the other person knows what that person wants. And it is not fair for you to assume that they know what you want, and it doesn't make it any less novel if you have to show them or teach them. And it doesn't mean they care about you any less if they don't know. Hold them accountable for what they do know. Now, again, I'm going to conclude by saying this: if you told me to shut the door open, and you know, and I drop the ball and don't do it, yeah, you have every right to have an attitude. Because obviously, I'm not working on a relationship. I'm not working on what you want and need, even if it's the obvious. And that's really where so many relationships go wrong. We assume the obvious and get disappointed when they don't know. And it's not fair for you to assume that they know. Hold them accountable for that which they do know. That's just one example.
Now, Mar, we had attended a mutual forum that was, I think it was back in, just before Christmas, if I'm not mistaken, in L.A. And there was a young lady there, if you remember, she mentioned, the question was asked to her, was that if a man took you out and for some reason his credit card declined and he couldn't pay, would that be a deal breaker? And she said unequivocally, yes, it would be a deal breaker. And what we had said was that what would happen if it was declined because maybe there was some fraud going on in his card and bank to protect him put a block on his card unbeknownst to him, or he just generally didn't realize that there was something up with his card and he apologized. The thing I wanted to mention to that was that a lot of times people make mistakes, you know what I mean, and nobody's perfect. So I think that it's unrealistic to have these kind of harsh expectations on people without giving them a chance. And being a believer, I think that you should use discernment and not these, you know, kind of restrictions and rules and impose them on other people. What do you think about my comment?
Man, I totally concur, 100%. I mean, like you said, but we're in the same language. You know, it's not fair. You're doing yourself a disservice. I get it. You're on a date. You're supposed to have your stuff together. Well, you know, especially if he has a legitimate excuse and he's not like, and he's not acting as if this was a pre-planned event. You know, I mean, I've been to certain places where I haven't had my car declined, but, you know, maybe I forgot my car keys or, you know, something where I needed maybe my significant other as a resource at that time. And, you know, I will let her know. I'll get you back. I just, you know, my keys in the car or whatever the case. I mean, I mean we can go on many different examples, but all I'm saying is, yeah, you know, instead of cutting him off, I mean, now, if that's a reoccurring habit, yes, that's a whole other issue. And, yes, you know, maybe he's not the best person for you, but you know, it's in my opinion, it's unfair and unrealistic. You know, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to give the floor. This is powerful. I have a daughter, and when she turns 16, I'm not getting her a car. You know, at 17, but when I'm getting her on 16, it's probably the most romantic movie I've ever seen in my life, and that was Shrek. I'm going to get her the DVD to Shrek, and we're going to watch that together. Because the reason why I say it's the best love story, and give me like a minute on this one, is because you saw so many themes that society puts on us, and they really like counteract the
opposite. Yeah, Michael.
Hello?
Right there?
So it's kind of like they were, like, you saw that Shrek was older, you know, didn't have the kingdom. He actually did have a kingdom that was bigger than the actual Lord Farquaad, if you will. And Lord Farquaad was lacking in so many other areas, and they kind of, you know, made it a parody, if you will. But, you know, you had Fiona who at the end of the day, you find out midway through the movie, you're an ogre as well. But we found out that ogre, Shrek, loved her just the way she was, and it was okay. You know, it's okay to be you. Why must you hide behind this big castle and this hill and dragon that you hide behind? And it's okay to be yourself. You know, why not seek after the guy who is more like you than instead of more than what you'd like him to be? That's very powerful there, you know, in relationships. And I tell women that goes true for men, too. You know, men also have unrealistic expectations, too, to some degree. They expect women, you know, she's a dime in the face. They expect her to be a dime in the heart and character. And then we get mad when she's not, because we look at her and say, she's so fine. There's no way this woman can't have that same beauty on the inside. But no, that doesn't mean that at all. You know, so, I mean, I'm saying the same thing to men, too. Men need to have realistic expectations just like women do. You know, I guess like Buffett, come let us reason together. And that's where a lot of times we go on. We're so busy pointing the finger, but let's put the hands down and let's talk about it. You know, some reasonable next step.
All right. Well, I want to take another caller and caller, hello, how you doing? And what's your name? Where are you calling from? What?
Hi. I want to
ask, how you doing?
How does the book relate to your personal love life?
Very good question. She asked, if I heard her correctly, how does the book relate to my personal love life?
Correct.
Yes, the book does stem from personal love life experiences. Yes, it unequivocally does. Women have asked me, you know, have all these been said? Yes, they have. Yes, they have, and I have a whole vault as well, too. Like, that's kind of what I do. You know, it's my gift. I give back to the world. So, I mean, I'm always writing. But how does it impact? Now, how does it impact my love life in terms of, you know, dating, if you will? Well, I tell women I'm married to the book. So, I mean, you know, as far as dating, that's out. I mean, like, you know, I mean, well, not that I'm closed off to it, but the point is, you know, when you're doing a project like this, you do have to commit to it so much. Mar-El is a character, if you will, because, I mean, there's other layers to this, you know, like that musician and singer side. I actually have a one-man show attached to the book, too, but it's more of a romance character. But even though it is a character, you know, it is kind of a snapshot of, you know, my reality on some level. But does it impact me as far as my love life? No. You know, of course, like most people, they want to find out about the author, but my life is a living epistle. You know, I'm kind of an open book. But, yeah, and this book did kind of stem from my I had, like this, in summary, yes, I've had different muses to give me inspiration. But in that, I mean, again, I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to capture that and share it for the greater good of society.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Cole, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Raven, I'm calling from L.A.
All right, all the way from L.A. Well, thank you. Appreciate your comment.
No problem.
Tamara, let's talk more about your relationship coaching. And so, do you coach mostly women, or do you coach men and women?
Men and women. I will say, 65-35. Like, I give more advice more to women, 65%, than I do, and probably 35% men. I'm very transparent. I mean, everybody says they're kind of hard in the face. Funny, although I have a book of love. If you haven't noticed my commentary, you know, on top of being very opinionated, you know, the advice I try to give is not only just research based from personal experience, but also what the research shows. So I try to give as many carrots as I can to women in particular and hope that they would listen, coming from a man's perspective. You know, I will share things that kind of like, you know, not so much like, well, yeah, in the sense of like Steve Harvey. I say this all the time, and I'm going to, and I think it's from the last caller. This is funny, but it's true. And I say this respectfully, ladies, so please listen and take heart, because these books that are out, ultimately, they are here to help you, my book included, and all these other, you know, writers. However, the travesty of Steve Harvey's book, if someone asked, you know, Marvin, you're a writer, how do you feel knowing he's aired out his dirty laundry? And this is funny, but it's true. I said, I have no problem with it whatsoever. I think it's wonderful. You know, I mean, independently, I don't have any. I'm always happy for someone's success. I said, but what I like about Steve Harvey's book the most is the fact that this man gave you all the answers and all the rules, play by play. He put it in a book. He put it in an e-book. Put it on an audio book. Gave you all the answers that men probably are mad at him. I said, but the travesty of this book is this man gave you all the answers. But a lot of women look at him and say, oh, what does he know? He's a man. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
And that's so funny. It's like, here's a man telling you about a man, but because he's a man, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's like me saying, you know, you're a woman, and you can advise a woman, oh, what would you know? You're a woman. That doesn't make any kind of sense whatsoever. So I say, you know, one thing I tell ultimately women and men, but women in particular, when men, especially racial coaches, when they give you these advice, please take heed of this, because most of these men, you know, this is to help you out. You know what I mean? I know a lot of women, especially in a Christian, they're always trying to find their Boaz and all that stuff. Well, I heard a preacher talk about, you know, you need to find Boaz, but you stay away from his nephew, Whoaz and Dumbass, you know, all that other stuff and all those other asses, you know, and focus on Boaz, but you have to be listening, and be sensitive, you know, especially when you hear advice from men as your brother in Christ. I'm not going to steer you wrong, you know, because the same thing, from I've made some mistakes, you know, and I don't want, you know, anybody to go down those roads. Like, no, don't go down that road, go down this road. That stay on that straight and narrow. That straight and narrow is so plain, but like the Bible says, very few choose it, very few find it. You know, although that road is right in front of you, and it's straight and narrow, not to the left and to the right. Anyway, I'm getting off subject, but that was my answer and summary to the caller, and really appreciate all the callers. Keep calling in. We really enjoy the questions you have, and really appreciate you listening.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you mentioned Steve Harvey's book, Marvin, and you know, I have a lot of issues with Steve Harvey's book. Number one is, as believers, I don't think we have any place to be. And he called himself a believer, by the way. And, you know, and this 90-day rule, you know, I mean, you know, when the Bible talks about the Word of God, specifically talks about us abstaining to, you know, to a marriage. And he has no question. He doesn't even mention that. And so I think it gives, you know, women a lot of false or misleading statements, which will, you know, and unfortunately, people read these things and they conduct their lives according to the gospel of Steve Harvey, and he should be pointing them to Christ, having that kind of large platform and audience, you know. So I have a lot of issues with that. I don't want to get into that, but that's a whole another show. But so, Mark, what advice would you give, from a godly man's perspective, what wisdom would you give to women who are looking for God's best in the spouse, who have made a few mistakes, who have probably, you know, because Marv, I mean, you know, in your line of business, you know, in what you do, you know, you promote your book, you know, you gave an analogy where, you know, an example where a woman, she read your book and she slammed the book on the floor because she would, you know, she didn't like the content, but obviously you said that she was probably hurting. She, you know, she had some damage from her past. So a lot of people have, you know, some damage, you know, have very pessimistic about meeting the right person, being married and what have you. So being a godly man and being a relationship coach, what godly wisdom do you give them from the scriptures, and what advice would you give women who are listening to the show but also who are looking for possibly God's best in a spouse for them?
Raj, you should not have given me the mic on that one, because this is you know, this is, I don't know if they want this, but I'm going to tell it. And ladies and gents, please still buy the book. Even though this is gospel, don't blame this. Don't hate the messenger. Hate the message. You shouldn't hate either of us. But this right here, this is it for 2015. Two things we're going to say. The very first thing is, ladies and gents, especially ladies in particular, I know, you know, I mean, obviously it's kind of more ladies. In my travels, and not only just in research and reading books and other, you know, commentary on an ongoing relationship dilemma or dichotomy, if you will, my advice would be, stop selling yourselves out for what you want and go after what you need. That is the problem. Women are very too busy going out, selling themselves out for what they want and what they think God has for them. Ultimately, marriage is choice and love and commitment. When you go after what you need, that man, what you need, again, like going back to that shred, he's not going to be packaged the way you want him, 98.6 out of 100. He may be, but realistically, but it doesn't mean you're settling. You know, I say all the time, I use a trivial example, but and I've seen a lot of Christian women who before, this is a simple example. I remember one lady in particular who we were talking, and she said, you know, my God can do anything. He can do anything but fail, and he's not a liar. And God told me that my husband was 6 feet tall and X, Y, Z. I said, pause. So if your man, if you met a man who had everything on your list of 100, which is a whole other can of worms, I'll put a push pin right there. If he had 99 of 100, but because he's 5'9" or 5'8", he's not the man of God for you. I said, listen to how that sounds. You're going to sell yourself out because this guy is 5'8", 5'9". But last time I checked, you're 5'2", 5'7", maybe in heel. But yet because your husband-to-be and this guy believes, God, that you are the one, well, it's not in agreement with my spirit because God told me my husband was 6 feet tall. So I mean, it sounds trivial. But I mean, you know, come on, like this is something how we kind of sell ourselves short because of that. The second thing, so that's, I mean, I'm getting a trivia with them, but it's true, you know. And but the second thing, which is most important, and I was sharing my buddy with this yesterday, 1 Corinthians, the obvious chapter, 1 Corinthians, you know, chapter 13 on love. We always refer to that. I'm not gonna go through all those scriptures, but here's what I'm gonna point out. Show me, not just in that chapter, but show me really throughout the Bible where love, it says love is joyous, love is happiness, love is sublime. No, all those descriptors talk about love is patient, long-suffering, endures all things, is steadfast. All these things would require you to die of yourself. Love is not easy. Wait, let's look at Jesus and the cross. Even Jesus himself didn't want to bear the cross at some point. He did for us. But it's an example of all these examples of true love. Love is about true, unadulterated sacrifice, dying of yourself. My best friend, Aaron, he's been married about 16 years now, and he said, you know, Mar, reality is I love my wife dearly. He said, but I know at the end of the day I'm in God's will. Not every day I'm not all googly-eyed, gaga in love with her. No, I'm not. He said, but I know I can look myself in the mirror and know that I'm in God's will because, you know, I'm dying to myself daily. The more I die to myself, the more I find myself loving her. So to me, to love this woman is not, that is not the hard part. It's dying of myself. So and pass that advice on to aspiring people, aspiring to be married. The minute you really start to die to yourself, which is the theme of Christianity anyway, you're gonna find your husband, and truth be told, your husband's already in front of you. It's just that, again, once you stop selling yourself out for what you want and go after what you need, you know, you'll be that much further ahead of the game. I'm a part of another group, and I'm going to give you the mic back, Roger. I'm a part of a group where, and they're all trying to commit to the celibacy and stuff, and the moderator of the group, she recently got married, and, you know, I laughed and I joked with her. I said, so I've known this lady for a long time. I said, you know good and well, the reason why you got married is because you got out of your own way. I watched your progression. I watched you go from being self-centered, really pious, if you will, or jaded, to getting out of your own way. And let me see if this man I'm meeting right here really is for me, although he may not be aesthetically what I want, or he may not be, you know, this, that, and this in him. He may not be, yes. He may not be all you want him to be, unequivocally true. However, he is certainly all you need him to be. And I'm done with that. I didn't take a breath on that one. That was rich right there. You know, but that goes for men too. But I'm just passing it on, you know, ladies. Here's a classic example of do not sell yourself out for what you want. Go after what you need, because what you need is really, you know, I'm not supposed to be a betting man, but as if I were a betting man, he is right in front, and that I do know. That I do know. Anyway, next question, Raz.
Well, you know, you heard it, ladies. Well, I would say this is that to what you just said, to add to what you said, was that I think that especially for Christian women or Christian men too, a lot of times we talk about that's not my type, she's not my type, he's not my type, but we got to look at that and say where do our types come from, because types is what we learn out in the world through the media, through our past soul ties to people that we've either had sex with or dated or what have you, but God is not so much concerned about a type. He's concerned about the heart of a person. Of course, he understands. He's the author of love. He created love, and he created attraction, and he created sex. So he understands that you have to have a level of compatibility in the area of physicality and all the other physical areas. However, I truly believe that God is truly more concerned about marriage is a ministry, and it's also being conformed to the image of Christ. And I think a lot of times we miss the whole concept of what, why God created marriage. And until we get back to that premise, we're going to enter into these situations called marriage with the wrong motives, with the wrong expectations, and with the wrong intentions, and therefore it's doomed to fail. Marvin, what do you think about my comment?
You know, I think that's excellent. Now, I want to care about what you're saying. Not only are you so dead on, Raz, but also someone to add too. Is now, I want to clarify, I thought about that as you were talking. Ladies and gentlemen, ladies, understand that I am not saying love is not happiness, but this is the watch this. Happiness and joy is a byproduct of those adjectives of love that the Bible talks about. It's kind of like, you always hear about these coaches. I think about John Wood in particular. I don't know if you know about John Wood, but John Wood was a former UCLA basketball coach, and he's the one with, you know, I think they won like 7 NCAA titles back-to-back. And what he talked about, and this is so true, and it's relative to this relationship and the concept of love in relationships, he said the winning of those championships and those perfect records and those banners was a byproduct. Winning was a byproduct of practice. I'm going to say it again. Winning was a byproduct of practice. It's what we did in practice. We practiced perfectly. And because we practiced perfectly and we were, excuse me, so set on practice, the winning of the games was a byproduct we did in practice. Likewise, joy and happiness and that pursuit of happiness, we also want to be happy, that is a byproduct of love in its purest form, that dying of self or adhering to all those acts of being patient, long-suffering, enduring. Out of that, happiness and fulfillment come as a byproduct of doing those things. And yes, you're right, Brad, you know, in the context of Christian relationships, you know, we got to go back to the fundamentals of marriage, for God, how he intended it, fidelity, the union of, all those things are to not only help us be more Christ-like, but to teach us about Christ, which goes back to teach us about love.
Absolutely. Another thing I wanted to add, Mark, was that I can't actually pinpoint the scripture exactly, but it goes to the example like this, where Jesus Christ mentioned that if you want to gain your life, you must first lose it. And so it means that if you lose whatever your expectations are in a man or in a woman, if you surrender that to God and just stop, just rest, just chill, and let him work in you, and you will gain so much more than what you thought you would gain by doing it in your own strength and your own ability. So I'm from experience, you know, out there, you know, chasing women, doing things in my own strength when I didn't have to do any of that, when I could have just, you know, surrendered my what I wanted and really the Lord, and he would have added these things to me. So, Mar, I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, as a relationship coach, do you see people are getting in their own way a lot and interfering with the process that God is trying to take them through?
I mean, it's tight, but it's right, and the answer is unequivocally yes. You know, you were on the panels we were on, Raz, and you know, they were trying to get all deep and engaging. You know, and I know we were, you know, and I'm not being biased. I know we were outnumbered women to men, but you know, I gave a hard word that really I wasn't trying to silence the lamb, but in its purest form. And I told him this. I said, the reason why most of us aren't married, most of us, honestly, it's not because we can't find a mate. It's that we don't want to do the work. If we're going to really, really tell the truth, we don't want to do the work it takes to have a successful marriage. The only place success comes before work is in the dictionary. So, you know, again, as much as we want, quote-unquote, marital bliss, going back to what I said earlier, notice how well we keep saying it's cyclical. It doesn't change. The more, and my best friend Aaron said it best, the more he dies to himself daily, the happier he is in marriage, because it's about the sacrifice. It's the purest form. They said marriage is the purest form of love because of the fact, unlike, you know, your family love or your love for your children, that kind of is almost inherent. But loving the next person is really an act of volition. It is not an emotion. You know, it is an emotion. Okay, we understand it does have feelings, but again, all those things are byproducts of denying yourself. And, you know, we can exegete it however we want, but whether we use red letter diction or dissect it, ultimately those translations are universal. Love and marriage is dying of self, and the work really is not in another person. The work is really within us. But watch this. It is, like, for example, I'm just thinking, it is okay, you know, although I am aspiring to be married and all that stuff, but it is okay for me to say I'm not going to do the work. Now, because a lot of people don't want to admit that, it's almost like you're doing a self-care to dad. No, it's not a bad thing, but don't act like, disacknowledge it, you know, just as I become more Christ-like, you know, I'm realizing it in my journey. You know, I am seeking out to be married because I realize that, no, it's not good for man to be alone. As much as I want to try to do this, you know, single and all that stuff, it's cool. But, you know, we are ultimately starving ourselves, not because the physical or the sex is a limbic function, but because God gave us emotions and reasons. And reason, we're actually denying ourselves the limbic function of satisfying our emotional craving. You know, we engage in other emotional relationships, may not be people, may be things, because we're too much trying to fill that void of emotional relationships when it was ultimately designed to have all those, you know, physical needs and emotional needs satiated. And I like that word, within the context of marriage. And we can argue around it any way we want to. It's tight, but it's right. I mean, you know, if y'all don't buy the book, hey, I'm doing my duty. It's past preaching that word on. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause, I mean, it's tight, but it's right. And I'm talking to me, too. Because what I'm saying to you, it applies to me as well. You know, in summary, the only reason why many of us aren't married is we honestly don't want to do the work associated to be successful with it. It's okay. Hopefully, my prayer for all of us, we get to the place where we're willing to do that work, you know? Because once we get to that place, we will do that work. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And I want to add, Mar, that, you know, doing that work, what does that mean? It means that you have to get before God, surrender your will to His will, let God minister to your heart. Let him divorce all those soul ties, all the men, all the women that you've had sex with. Let Him get that out of your system. Let Him get all the hurts from your childhood, all the rejections from your past. You've been in past marriages or past relationships and you were rejected. It didn't go the way you expected. It went wrong. You made some mistakes. You know, let God just clean you out and let Him show you who you are so that He can present you. Because, and that's the work that I believe, Marv is talking about. And the Bible talks about, you know, do not conform yourself to the ways of this world. Do not conform yourself to its customs, its traditions, and what you see on TV, and what you see Nicki Minaj and what you see Kim Kardashian doing, and Jay-Z and all them people on these shows, what you see them doing, because that's not those that love the world. That's not the love of God. It's not God's way. And so if you want God's success, because here's the thing, God's perspective is not our perspective. He has the perspective of an eagle, per se, and you have the perspective of a chicken. He can see more things than you can. He says, don't do that. Don't talk to that man. He's not mine. But, yeah, Lord, he's fine, but he's not mine. And I don't want you to marry an infidel. So as you build a relationship with God, you start to hear his voice more, and he leads you and guides you in where he wants you to go. And I truly believe that, like Marsh said, that a lot of us, we don't want to do that. We think that we know best. We think that it's boring. We think it's we don't want to discipline our flesh. We don't want to discipline our minds to get in God's word and shut out. It's okay to have your love life on hold. It's okay to have your social life on hold if it's for the greater good. Shucks, Mark. They ain't ready for that. What do you think about my comment?
Notice we are in sync. I don't have any pushback, man. I mean, like, you're just doing in addition to, you know, you're adding to what we're saying. So, I mean, we are on, and what I like about this, man, is that, especially in the context of Body of Christ, what we're saying is good sound word that we're giving, and I'm not being biased because I'm speaking it, and I'm not being biased, I'm just speaking to my brother in Christ, right? But, like, you know, the word, what we're passing on is sound knowledge. I mean, this is not even really doctrine. I mean, you know what I mean? Because some people might say it is, but, I mean, like, this is both logical and spiritual. If it's spiritual and logical, I mean, it's almost like a tautology. It's hand in hand. You know, sometimes people can call themselves spiritual, but they don't make any kind of sense logically, or converse, it can be logical. And that sounds spiritual, but this word passed on, it is sound. And now it's hard, because, I mean, it's, you know, it's not even, it's pointing inward. You know, all those five fingers are pointing at me, you know, or you, or, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we're not saying, you know, the next man's the problem. No, I'm the problem. But once I get my solution, you know, my eyes and lens will be open. I'm reminded of a passage my dad would teach me. And it's in the gospel. It's one of the healings that Jesus did. One of the blind men. I want to say it's in John. And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of rusty. Shame on me. But anyway, it's a passage where Christ healed this man, blind man, and he tested his eyes the first time, and he said, "How do you see men?" And he said, "I see men as trees walking." So it's one of the few miracles where Christ actually had to do it a second time. So he had to touch his eyes a second time. And he said, "Now how do you see men?" He said, "I see men as they are." A lot of times God has to touch us that second time so that we don't see men as trees walking, or when we look in the mirror, I see myself as a tree walking. No. You know, I need to see myself as I am so that I in turn can see others as they are and help me see who and what I need to see.
A lot of times, you know, I said this last week on our show last week, Mark, a lot of times what happens is that what Satan does is he can't attack the truth, because truth is beyond him. It's God is truth. But what he does is he tries to attach a different meaning to that truth, so you have a different perspective at looking at the truth, and therefore the truth becomes altered in your own through your own disordered perception. So a lot of times what God, I believe, he does with us as Christians and believers is he wants to adjust our perspective and our perception and look at things from his perspective versus looking at from the lens of the world or through your past hurts or your experiences and your type, so to speak, if you know what I mean. And so, you know, but we know it, the work is hard, but what is harder, to go through a divorce? What is harder to be, you know, emotionally distraught because those things are rough. So
yes.
It would behoove you to all of us really to really go for the work and that's not anybody again who has been through situations. I mean, you know, it just means that we have to do some course correction and go through these things so that we can really get the person, if you're single, get the person that God has handpicked for you this is the person that God's love will reflect through that person to you. And this is not a person that you're going to pick in your right now way of thinking and hoping that person will love you. But no, this will be a person that God wants you to love you. And so there's a big difference. So, Mar, is there anything else you can, anything you would like to add as we close the show on your relationship coaching? And real quick, Mar, I mean, how do people get hold of your books and how do people reach you if they want coaching or if they want you to come out and speak at any of their functions and like that?
Yes. My website, everythingawomanwants.com, you can get the book there, of course, but it also has a contact me information. If you want to contact, do bookings or anything like that or have me come speak out, there's a contact tab you can click on and give me information, and I'll make sure we get back with you. Again, as far as social media, either Mar L Author on Twitter and Instagram, or Mar L Author on Facebook, or my real name, which is Marvin Lawton. So, again, you get the book from there, or if you want to get an autographed copy from yours truly, you can inbox me, and I can actually get an autographed copy because my regular distributor is going to send an actual book out. But I do have autographed copies I can make sure to get out to you. So that's how to get in contact. Again, go to my website or those other media accounts, and that's how to get in contact with me. Just in closing, I know you have to close out. I really appreciate you having me. I really appreciate the callers calling in and listening. Raz always has a great show. Hopefully he'll have me back on the show. But men and women universally, the commentary we had here, it's all in love, but I believe it's some really good carrots passed on because I'm tired of seeing the Christian community in shambles because of not our ignorance, but just we don't see a better way when the better way is right in front of us, and that is ultimately dying of ourselves. Because the more we die of ourselves, the more we will be able to love not just our fellow man, but our husband or wife.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, well, thanks a lot for tuning in for this session of Can We Talk Fridays. My name is Raz Williams, your host. I want to thank Mar L for coming on the show today. Go out to his book, Everything He Wants to Hear, First Thing in the Morning. See you guys same time next week.